I'm Brian.
And I am Abdul Iba Sadiq Abla Ibn. I am successor of Muhammad. I am the Mahdi. I am the successor of Jesus Christ.
Oh, Lord have mercy. I have, and our special guest today.
My genetics are so superior. I come from the royal line of the gods. Come worship at my feet. But this beanie represents the working man.
I got a question.
Yes, my son.
Did Jesus wear a beanie?
Jesus wore a headdress. The working man. I would know.
Okay.
I was there.
Since you're his successor.
What questions do you have for me?
What is the meaning of life?
The meaning of life is to be successor of Muhammad.
But I can't be because you are.
You can still be a Mahdi. We're for the working man.
I need you to bring back my co-host, weirdo.
But we also work at Starbucks and make your soy latte.
Well, you lost me with soy. I don't think you're the successor if you're trying to get me to drink soy.
Okay.
And now he's back. Ladies and gentlemen, Reggie.
The mockery of the Abba al-Sadiq Abdullah Hashim.
Hashim up because nobody wants to hear anything from him anymore.
Who established the School of Divine Mysteries.
Yes, the School of Divine Mysteries. I wonder if he has a van that looks like the Mystery Machine.
Oh, God. Okay, look, here's why we're even bringing it. Because I just thought it was hilarious. You know, there's a lot of talk online about this guy and Christians calling him the Antichrist and all this kind of stuff. But in reality, though, this dude's just a narcissistic psychopath, wacko person.
He is another mental idiot who has figured out a way to take advantage of other mental idiots.
And I didn't even want to get intellectual with this because, I mean, honestly, Capturing Christianity and Ruslan already went through this, so I'll put the links of their stuff below anyway. So if you want to get into the technical stuff about the Antichrist and everything.
You don't really need to get into the intellectual part of this because there's really nothing intellectual about it. I'll be honest with you. Until you brought it to my attention, Reggie, I had not heard of this guy. Been busy doing other things, and I sat down to watch the video, and all I could do was laugh. The interview he does with the girl – and you can tell that she's trying to give some level of levity almost to the conversation. And he's just sitting over there in his like Gap brand dock worker's jacket and his hoodie pulled over his head. And he keeps giving these answers that are contradictory. Each question she asks him, his answer contradicts his last answer. I don't even think he realizes that. He's nonsensical at best.
Well, and, but you can't blend Islam and Christianity.
You know, that's where it all fell apart for me was when he said, he goes, I am the Mahdi, which is the bringer of peace and justice at end times for Islam. And I am also the successor to Jesus Christ. I was like, dude, can't be both. You can't be either, but you got to pick one or the other for me to even give you.
Well, I
part
mean,
of
look,
my thought process.
But here's the other thing too. But this is like we're seeing a cult live now, right? Because you think by now we'd learn and people would be aware of like a cultish behavior and all this kind of stuff. You have all these people who are being interviewed and coming out and saying he did all these miraculous things, like even raising people from the dead, right?
Yeah.
And blotting out the moon and stuff. And it's crazy, dude. But okay, look, here's the thing. There's been a lot of, and actually even the text of the Bible says there has been antichrists right? So it's not like, but there will be the Antichrist, right? So you have that going on, and he could be a Antichrist, but not the Antichrist.
You know, here's a legitimate question, just kind of a sub question for all this. And the reason I asked this question is because I finally got to sit down with somebody the other day at lunch, and we talked about, he's Catholic, and I asked him a lot of questions and he was really, some he couldn't answer, but he made a really good effort to answer a lot of questions. And this came up in the conversation, is the Antichrist and Satan the same entity?
No.
Some religions believe they are.
Yeah, but no, it's not.
Some sects of Christianity believe
it. I mean, it's the same power kind of thing, you'd say, because they work for the same team, you know, yeah, if you want to call it that. God, man, my knee just popped when I'm...
You're going to be all right, man.
So yeah, no, it's not. It's not like Lucifer, Satan, or whatever. But it is he is an agent of that, right?
So he's kind of like the devil's trilogy, the devil's trinity.
I don't know. But again, I didn't want to get Capturing Christianity did a great job of like getting into some of the weeds about, you know, the Antichrist and all that kind of stuff. And Ruslan repeated it and did a couple of things and referred back. So I mean, yeah, if you want details about what all that stuff is, just go there, because I don't want to repeat their efforts.
But I think the bigger,
it was fun,
overarching thing to this guy is his behaviors and his particular bucket of crazy, and he does have a bucket full of it, is the reason why Christianity's kind of got a black eye right now.
I don't think they have a black eye.
Well, I think they do, because people don't take us seriously. We're getting mocked. Well,
okay. We in America have a problem because of our cultured, stupid churches that we've got way too many churches who have let the world infect their ideas of, you know, what Christ stood for. But I think in general, you still have the, you know, real Christ-like behaviors happening with real churches and stuff around. So, I mean, it's just, you can find all that anywhere, though.
Yeah.
Like Islam, basically, any Islam church in America that isn't going and killing the infidels is actually doing the opposite of what Muhammad said.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it calls for jihad. It calls for, you know, all the Sharia law. It calls for that.
Yeah, it does.
So,
very clearly.
If they're not doing that, they're a watered down Islam, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the thing. But anyway, I just thought it was funny, dude, because this guy gets up and you think it's a spoof. Like when I saw original, and he gets up there and they're like, they start chanting, you know.
I'll be honest, when I first saw it, I thought it was a Gap commercial. Like when I saw him in the perfect black jacket and the hoodie and the perfectly cultured beard, and I was like, this is a Gap commercial. I was like, people are going to start dancing and like drinking and partying. And it would just wind up being some lunatic in front of a room full of lunatics who actually believe he is who he says he is. And
he's like, for the working man, he just says all this stuff. And yet if you look at the room that they're in these videos, right, he is so high above everyone. Like it is absurd. And they're like looking up at this dude, right? That's stupid. Like that's not demonstrate that illumin. I don't know. Anyway, it's just funny.
I figured something out this week, Reggie.
Yes.
I am the Mahdi.
You're the Mahdi?
I'm the Mahdi.
Mahdi.
Mahdi. I am the Mahdi. I am the bringer of justice and peace at the end of the times. Actually, I'm not. I wouldn't even know how to start. Even if you gave me a manual, I probably wouldn't read it. So anyway, when you showed me that, I was shocked. And then, you know, to go out and I immediately took the name and started typing it in. And then I went and typed it into AI. Mm-hmm. And then all this stuff started coming up. And I was like, this guy is. And what people don't realize is he's educated in Indiana.
With a religious studies degree.
Yeah, with a religious studies degree. He started off studying under a guy who believed that he was the Mahdi. And when he died, he stepped up and proclaimed that he is the replacement for the Mahdi.
The successor of this guy, who's the successor of this guy. Yeah. Da, da,
da, da. If you go back and listen to his story, this dude's all over the road. Like, he's all over the road.
It's just stupid. So anyway, I don't want to waste a whole bunch of time there with that, but it was just fun to mock.
It was fun to watch and make fun of.
Because this is dumb. And people, you expect these psychopaths who are charismatic, if you want to call it, even though I thought it was really drone-ish. Like, this is the thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, this guy's totally reading this these people.
Everything that he did and everything that his congregation did seemed extraordinarily rehearsed.
Oh, yeah.
So I wonder how much of this is
show.
Well, and him trying to create a social media following.
Okay, now here's the other thing was, like, this could be a CIA stunt. What to, like, they put that guy there to destabilize the region of some sort, which they do.
Well, yeah.
And then he's gone rogue. And so you could totally see that, right? That
he was. Happen. He didn't. He seemed like the kind that could get loose of the goose a little bit. Like, he seemed like the kind that could be like, you know what? I am Jesus.
My dad's Egyptian.
Yeah.
I mean, that's close enough.
Moses was Egyptian, technically. like how many? That's not 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon. That's like 628 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Well, anyway, but yeah, so that's the other thing. And it, I think, you know, look, anyway, that could totally be possible. I mean, he's definitely got the characteristics of somebody that could destabilize something by doing certain things and having, he had support at some point in order to be escalated and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, you know, that's another
theory. You know, it'll be interesting though. You know, I'm sure the Christian community will come out and decry him and say that he's not real, but I'm wondering what the Muslim community will do with this guy. Like, this, like, I've never, you know, that you don't ever really see them decry anyone. So I'm wondering if
they just kill him.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if this dude's really, like, I wonder if there's going to be like an outcry from the Muslim community to shut this dude up. Cause there should be. I mean, he's obviously,
he claims Muhammad is the successor of Simon Peter and Jesus, right?
Yeah, and there was never a successor to Jesus anyway, so you can't, you can't make that argument, right? Like, there's so many holes in the logic line of this that an amateur Christian of a few days, if they read their Bible a little bit, could poke holes in this, right? So it's this very. But you know, it's also very smart, because fundamentally at a time he's coming in during a lot of chaos. And if you look at some of the most famous cult leaders in the past, Jim Jones, those guys, they came in during a period of chaos and made themselves sound like the bringer of peace, right? And when you have a lot of people who are in chaos, and right now mental health is a huge issue worldwide, That makes a lot of people ripe for this guy to take advantage of, right? Like, it's, if you look historically through cults, right, through cult behavior, you'll find the occasional exception to the rule. Hey, I just think your cult sounds good and I want to join. But most people who join cults are troubled people who are looking for something to belong to. And with the current temperature of our country, of our world, there is a lot of people who are ripe for the pickings for this guy. Like, you know, and that's sad to me, because he's going to come in and take advantage of a lot of destitute and distraught people, that the last thing they need is this lunatic coming in and trying to convince them that he's Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, and plus, you know, he says, I am not the Antichrist. He says this, and he says the real Antichrist is a nation. Get ready. The United States
We're the Antichrist.
Which is totally not correct. The spirit, it's more of a spirit type of thing, blah, blah, blah. So, but
blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Flabby, flabby, flabby.
Speaking of health, I this is another perplexing thing that I guess I understand at this point, that the woke death cult's never going to agree to anything, no matter how much it's just obvious that it's correct. How they're railing against now the toxins, getting rid of the toxins and stuff in the food and all that kind of crap. I just don't like what that's not even part. It's not even partisan in anything. It's just saying our food is got stuff it shouldn't have it. That's banned in like a lot of other countries for a reason. There's so many. And then I saw this one guy say, that's the siren for
tornado
the lunch,
siren
for the lunch.
Oh, for the lunch. Okay.
For lunch.
I want a lunch siren.
I know.
Anyway.
You want a lunch.
Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But yeah, so I mean, but just somebody said, well, I'll trust the AMA over any of the other non-science stuff.
You mean the corrupt and purchased American Medical Association?
Yeah, that's what this guy said.
Okay, so let's be clear about how corrupt the American Medical Association is.
Good.
And this is coming from a guy who lives for working out and health and eating good food. It was the American Medical Association that perpetuated, boosted, and sold the lie of the food pyramid.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
It was the American Medical Association that sold, perpetuated, yeah, and boosted the lie that sugar was actually a dietary, helped with your diet. It helped you lose weight. There's a ad, and I have it on my phone. I keep it because it just makes me laugh, where they actually have a woman in the ad grinning, and she has a heaping spoonful of raw cane sugar and is going to eat this spoon. And at the bottom, it says, well, this will be a great healthy supplement for your diet. Crackheads. Look, I'm not saying that guys like RFK are right about everything. I think there are some things that he says that I don't necessarily think they're untrue, but I think they need a lot more study. But I do believe that I do believe that autism is a real thing and Asperger's is a real thing. And I do believe that there are some cases that are caused genetically, mm-hmm, but I also believe that there are some kids, there have been environmental factors that have caused the reversion for that. And I believe that even if he goes into this study and let's say the cases of autism decreased by 20% worldwide, it was worth every penny spent.
Here's the thing. It's not just that, though.
Yeah.
It's not just that. It's not just that the AMA is just a shit show of an organization that doesn't.
It's as corrupt as the FBI and the CIA. So.
Yeah. But not only that, though, you don't have to look very far at all. Like, it's not even a complex search that's hidden to find actual research and studies by respected, peer-reviewed scientific or medical research around anything like toxins and dyes and stuff in our food. Like, it's not even
arguable.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, so when, if you come out and you say, well, I'm only going to trust, it's, you are the same moron who says, I only trust professional journalism. When you neglect the professional journalism that doesn't agree with your opinion.
Here's the question.
That's the same moron.
This begs another question. When did the days of... I remember being a kid, my grandparents would watch the news. And if my grandfather saw a news story that was interesting, he would get the newspaper and follow up. And then if it was more interesting beyond that point, he would talk to people and ask people about opinions and try to form. When did that just completely go away? Like, when did the ability to say, okay, this guy on television said this. I don't know him personally. I don't know his agenda. I don't know what his beliefs are.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go read more. And then they would read more. And then they would have probing discussions with other people who might have talked about it as well. And they were not arguments or argumentative discussions, right? They were civil discourse. When did it just like totally vanish?
Well,
because it is literally like it used to be everybody did it. Now it's like 1 in 100 will have a social discourse with you that is actually calm.
What you had was when the networks were individually owned.
Yeah.
Okay. When they were like ABC, NBC, all those were like individual networks where they were owned and operated by different entities. I think you had actual media happening, but I believe it was around the Clinton era that you started seeing the media be bought up and changed and manipulated and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes sense with the rise of the deep state in that time period as well.
Well, and also here's another question I have. George Soros who is a billionaire, and by the definition of Bernie Sanders and AOC and all these people, is part of the oligarchy. The oligarchy. Whereas I heard a kid the other day ask his mom, what's an oligarchy? But anyway, yet they are accepting money in the billions from him on the left. And they don't ever bring up his name.
Well, you know why? He was, I mean, Soros is a master at using government funds for his own purposes, because he would only do a little bit with, you said, you said would pump it back into an NGO that was set up by his directions and all this kind of stuff. So like it was this big circle of money. That,
and even his son has come out against a lot of what George Soros stands for.
Well, I don't know. You know what? Look, you can here again.
Like it just does. It's the whole balance. It doesn't of add things. Up. It doesn't. None of it adds up.
But here, this is the thing. Like, don't take everything Doge does for, you know, biblical truth or anything. Don't do any of that. But however, you find a lot of pieces that fit.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't take you. It's not like you're saying, and there's enough of this to know that you have some real problems in manipulating the AMA and our food and our
drugs,
all kinds of stuff for a reason.
Yeah.
I mean, there's enough that you don't, it's not like every single thing is a manipulation of something else. There is a lot of propaganda. Don't get me wrong, but good grief, you can weave through a lot of things. It doesn't take long. I mean, it's, you know, anyway, I digress, but yeah. So I would say, it's just really one of the more absurd actions of like people who are left leaning.
I believe the professionals. Yeah. You should stop that. I believe what I can study and read and, you know, actually get into, right. I believe the things that I can.
Well, they say they trust the science, right? But then you look at the scientific research that was done. You look at how they did their studies. They look at what they tested, what they didn't. And it's like a total circle jerk of the it doesn't even make sense. And then you're like, well, how can you trust the science if they're not doing actual science? And then you have actual other scientists come out and say, yeah, this is this. And then they just go, no. I mean, it's ridiculous, dude. It's just, look. There's a reason why I saw this statistic the other day. I don't know if it's true or not. However, I just thought it made sense. You know, 90% of the caseloads for psychiatric places are liberals. I thought that makes total sense because they're butthurt all the time and they can't do that. Now, that's probably totally – have no idea if that's true or not. However, that was just a thing I saw.
I've actually started prefacing my conversations. I have conversations all the time. I strike up conversations with everybody, but I was talking the other day with somebody and I told them we were talking and they brought up a subject and I was like, all right, so I want to let you know pre-conversation, if you're butthurt, I don't care. If you're emotional, I don't care. If you can't talk facts, we don't need to talk. And that conversation died instantly. I was like, so in other words, you were just going to come with the same old talking points. The, you know, Elon Hitler and blah, 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 President Elon. Dude, shut up. Like, shut up. Like, listen, I know you want to go out and protest to keep my hands off your Medicaid. Nobody's trusting your Medicaid. That's not part of the plan to take Medicaid away. Nobody's taking SNAP benefits away. None of that is being taken away. And you have so little time in your life and so little important things to invest yourself in that you're going to take an entire day to go, you know, draw you out some cute little signs, you know, with Trump when he has hairs on fire and things like that on there. And you're going to go stand out on a street corner and bug people, quite frankly, disrupt life for everyone else so that you can perpetuate a lie that you can, you that is not provable on any level. And it just, to me is, I feel almost pity for them because it's just like, you really don't have a mind of your own. Like you don't, you really don't have, you have bought into the woke death cult ideology. You have bought into the hive mind. And that, and
you are a sheep.
And maybe this is why it's the problem. To me, the moment I'm in a room full of people who I hear talking and none of them are giving an original thought, it is offensive to my soul to be in that room. I want out and I want away from them because I know what's coming. I don't want to hear that, dude. I don't care. That's not important. Yeah. It doesn't fix anything. If you want to go cry, cry in your pillow like a grown man. I don't want to hear from you, dude. I don't want to hear about your broken heart. I don't want to hear about you, your hurtness and your wokeness.
But my roads.
No, nobody cares. Nobody cares.
No, but no. Well, and not just nobody cares, but like you're completely and totally bought into a false perception of reality. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know.
You're literally Chicken Little screaming that the sky is falling.
You are. Speaking of something totally and completely ridiculous that people actually think this Virginia, the Epstein girl. Yeah, they actually think she committed, you know, the unnamed thing.
Yeah.
No.
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 No. Come on.
Nope.
Come on.
Come on, guys. We all know that conspiracy theory is just common sense nowadays. And somebody wanted to shut her up. And let's be clear. And look, man, this is something that really bothers me about the Trump administration that's really gotten on under my skin is this whole time he was out there campaigning on, I'm going to let the Kennedy files go and I'm going to unrelease the Epstein list. And he's done none of it. The stuff that he let go, people already knew. And the Epstein list stuff that they let go, we already knew. I don't think we will ever truly know who all was on that list and what their attachments were to Jeffrey Epstein. Like, I don't think it'll ever exist. And I think there is the dark politicians in the background that are never going to let that go.
I think you have too many tentacles into the CIA and FBI and all that kind of stuff still.
Which bothers me because Kash Patel, the head of the FBI, he has the authority to release 100% of those documents on demand, and he hasn't done it. So all of this smash and talk that he'd made about how he was going to do this and this, dude, if you don't follow through on the things that you said you're going to follow through on, Kash Patel, I hate to be the guy that says this to you, but you're just another politician to me.
Yeah. I mean, okay. The Kennedy files. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was dumb.
That's dumb. Nobody cares.
No. And I mean, what they released does really, there's no clear anything.
Yeah.
But you do get some enough there to say, well, the CIA had a part in it.
Yeah.
So then you know that, right? You can pretty much.
But it's too late to do anything about it.
No.
And like, what are we going to solve?
But the Epstein stuff, dude, is like, no, we want, I mean, We've been asking for this stupid client list forever because, no, these pedophiles, the American people, the vast majority of American people do not want this kind of behavior being allowed at all, no matter what your level is.
Yeah, I don't care if you're Christian or non-Christian. Nobody's okay with child love.
Well, unless you live in California, which apparently they just once again voted against measures to crack down on that kind of stuff. California. Yeah. Just let's just take some dynamite and go through the border of California and just
I call it Sodom and Gomornia.
Anyway, but getting back to Virginia here, look, Virginia was a victim. She is just one of the few. Well, I don't know how many, but there's one of the few surviving victims that were.
Yeah, and she's one of the ones that actually came out and was like, I want this guy gone. Jailed.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously. You know, if this, you got to look at how the list has been handled. It's not been released. It's not done. It's still being. How could you not infer that there is, well, there's then some powerful, rich people who are keeping.
I'll take it a step further. I think the same person who made sure that Epstein died in jail and he was killed, he did not commit suicide. There have been more than one mortician or whatever you call the dude, whatever Quincy was, came out that he was strangled. And I would dare say that whoever was responsible for Epstein's death was probably responsible for hers, because and the other girl that was in the car accident and had kidney failure. I mean, this whole thing stinks that somebody wanted to kill this.
It was funny. No, not funny. I shouldn't say funny, but like I think it was on Tucker Carlson, one of the, and I can't remember who he was interviewing, because this is just coming through, but he interviewed somebody and they were talking about the injection that they have that introduces like a fast cancer thing where you're dead within
hours.
Maybe. Think of it was a week.
Yeah.
But it's this extremely fast moving deadly cancer. They'll inject you with it. And that was like talked about, right? Yeah. And it was, now I don't remember who it was, but it was somebody who would have, you know, that would have known. I can't remember who it was. Well, anyway, but the point being is that, you know, it's not like this stuff doesn't happen. We've been a part of overthrows and assassinations and stuff that's documented.
Yeah. That they've actually come out and said, yeah, we did this. You know, I think first of all, this girl, you're not going to tell me she was brave enough to go out and accuse him that suddenly with children and a life, she, after she had basically won her case, that she just suddenly decided to die. Like, I don't believe that. I don't believe for a minute that she just suddenly was like, I quit. You know, she was a fighter. You could tell by the way she was handling it all.
I would agree.
It's very sad to me that that people think that's a reality, man. That's, again, don't do the research. Do the friggin' research. You know?
Here's another thing.
Lay it on me, dude.
Oh, dang, I'm trying to find it. There was a CNN or New York Times article, and I'm trying to find where it is. But it basically, it was a total propaganda piece. All right. And it contained a study. So the study finds, you know, 70% of people disagree with something. And I can't find it. But anyway, if you look, and it was like this big bold headline that says, you know, blah, blah, blah. So then you go to the actual, and we've talked about this before, but it was just recently. You go to the actual article and you look at the fine print of the study.
Yep.
And it said 913 people. So they're making this whole thing about the nation, but over 913 people. They don't say where those 913 people were. They don't say what demographic or they were, what anything like that. But you got 913 that represent over the you know, 350 million people we got in the country, that they could have all lived in like urban liberal meccas.
Yeah.
You know, who knows?
And that's where they do the studies. They're not going to go to Indiana, which is a conservative state, and do a whole bunch of studies because they're going to lose. I don't know, man. There's a lot going on right now. There's a lot of foolishness happening.
But this is nonstop. This is why I don't understand. I've lost my patience. And I say this again, I've lost my patience with anybody who rallies for the left.
Well, here's what I'll tell you.
Lost it.
And I'll stand by. I made this statement a few weeks back, but I'll make it again. You're hearing the death rattle of the woke right now, because here's the thing. Every week, the left's Democratic Party
is shrinking.
Gets less and less popular. Every week another Dem converts. There's people that are abandoning the party. You know, a great example is they interviewed Bernie the other day and said, and it was a really a good interview. It was a conservative interview, and they asked Bernie, they're like, well, the more and more Americans dislike you. And he's like, well, 18,000 people showed up at my rally and 36,000 people showed up at this rally and 31,000 people showed up at that rally. Okay. So first of all, there's a good percentage of those people that you paid. So if you come up to me and said, hey, dude, here's $500. If you'll come into this rally and just cheer when I say something, I'd probably take your $500 and go in there and be like, woohoo, and then go on about my life. Right. So let's take the percentage of people that are paid. Let's just be fair and say that 100,000 people to three rallies, you take away 25% of them, right? Because you paid them. So they got 75,000. Then you have to take the ones that are drug addled and probably not properly hydrated because their brains are sapped dry. I would say the logical in that rally were probably 10%. The rest were, you know, angry leftist mob, right? So Bernie touts that as a win. Bernie, 100,000 people in a country of 460 million people is not a real high popularity percentage, bruh. You're a goth. You're the goth kids in high school. That's what you, that's who you are, Bernie. Nobody really likes you. Nobody trusts you. AOC as well, you know. I don't know if you saw the whole thing where AOC challenged Tom Homan to come after her. And I got a feeling he's going to take the challenge.
But the thing,
but that's the thing. It's a show. What did that buy you, AOC, except for an ignorant statement based on nothing? Like an ignorant statement based on nothing. All right. So all you angry leftists out there, I want to ask you a question. All right. So let's take all the top leftists, Cory Booker, AOC, Ilhan Omar, wrap them all up. Has anybody noticed that these people that were elected in districts haven't done a damn thing for the districts they were elected in? AOC hasn't done anything for her district other than cost them jobs and opportunities. You know, I'm so sick of the left talking about how heroic they are. They literally are job destroying, morale destroying neophytes that don't know how. If you gave them a manual to a table that took four screws to put it in, instead of using the brain power to put it together, they'd tell you the manual was racist.
Yeah. I mean,
like it doesn't, your whole argument is based on a sinking ship of foundations that are more and more and more daily being disproved by more and more and more people. The movement is growing that we see you for what you are. And we know that you're a lunatic and we don't want to follow a lunatic. So, you know, I mean, even Biden coming out and giving the speech, they act like him coming out and giving the speech was some kind of, you know, generous move. They paid him to give that speech. If there was no paycheck, he wouldn't have showed up for the speech. Like he's not some, you know, honest actor. They said, here's probably $500,000. Come give us a speech. And he ran up on stage and garbled off a bunch of nonsense that didn't really connect.
Well, I thought, I mean, look, you speaking engagements for a former president, huge money.
Yeah.
Huge money. Now it's not, I don't think it's $500,000, but I mean, it's a chunk.
Obama was making between $500,000 and $650,000 per engagement.
Yeah. Well, and it could be, I'm just saying, but like it's a, they're pretty highly paid.
Yeah.
And it's not just getting paid by Joe Schmo, but yeah. Okay. Look,
anyway,
I want to talk about one quick thing about what we're going to see here with all the tariff stuff. I think you will see corporations take advantage of this situation. And I think you already are seeing that. They're warning people, right?
Yeah.
Warning people, hey, prices are going to go up. These tariffs, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's going to get so bloated and they're going to use that opportunity. And you're already seeing kind of some things with that, right?
Yep.
Because what I don't think people understand, the tariff isn't on the sale price of an item.
Yeah.
It's on what's cost to put that item together so far, right? So if you, the big one's the iPhone.
Yeah.
Well, the iPhone costs, I think, anywhere from $500 to $550 to make. Mm-hmm. Well, the tariff's on the $500, $550. It's not on the, you know, $1,000, $1,500, whatever the hell they're going to cost, right?
Yeah.
Some of the other stuff that we talk about from China that, like, we overpriced T-shirts and this and that.
Yeah.
Well, they only cost a couple bucks to make. Well, the tariff's on the couple bucks. It's not on the $30 you're going to pay for the shirt.
Absolutely.
Right? But yet, I think what they're going to do,
and or at least what they're going to try to do.
What they're going to try to do is say, well, it's $30 and we took 100% tariff on it. So now it's going to cost you
60 you know, bucks.
Yeah. Or something. Or even like we're trying to take the hit for you, look good, but and raise it. You know, up to like $50 or something and say, well, look at look what your tariffs are doing. That's what's going to happen.
I think that's limited though. And the reason I think that's limited is I think the moment that Trump sees that start to happen, he's going to crucify those companies. I don't think he's going to play along. See, the problem is with Biden, those companies would go and they'd write him a check and he would go along. You can't buy a billionaire. You just can't.
No.
So now no. I think what Trump will do is here's why I think it won't happen.
I think it will happen.
They don't have someone that they can control when the time comes to answer to the American people. When Biden in office or Obama in office or even Bush in office, they could have gone in and been like, man, we, you know, we just go right here now. But I think that Trump gets his jollies from open hand pimp smacking companies for doing stupid stuff. And I think what's going to happen is if they try this, he is going to crucify them. And in a way that is going to be ugly and is going to cost them far more.
But even my company, Rand, are all about that. Like, it's constant with their reporting. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like it's like everything they can to spin something to be another person's problem than their own or to take advantage of a problem to where they can profit from it. That's what they do. So I don't think it's going to be like that's going to happen because even in my own company, it happens and it's happening. Not pricing, but just I'm saying. It's not far from the first step is like, well, all these tariffs causing all these problems. So now we have this. And then the next step is, well, we've increased our prices this because of that. And that's what happens. And that's going to happen.
Well, and here's something else that people I don't think realize. Most of the countries have already come to us and settled. They've already come and struck deals. There's very few outlying countries left, China being the main one. And China's economy is an absolute bullet train to hell right now. Like the yen has bottomed out. They are about to have to let I think the number was around 800,000 people. They're going to lose their jobs because they don't have the goods going out for the profit that they had before. So I think Xi Jinping's got two options. We'll fight this out, which Trump's like, no, we won't. We'll just build the stuff here and we don't need you anymore. Or he'll come to the table sooner than later. I think Xi Jinping's coming to the table. There's already been talk that he's mulling over meetings with Trump. Well, when that happens, you've given in. You're there to make a deal. And what I think is going to happen, I think if people will just hold on for this first year, you're going to see American prosperity that you've probably not seen in the last 50 years, but you've got to let the process go. You've got to let it come to its natural end. Worst case scenario for us in this, a bunch of car companies move here, hire people, a bunch of chip companies move here, hire people, infrastructure is built into our country. We become stronger. We become less unemployment. Unemployment hits its lowest and we actually start to see America thrive. Best case scenario, the same thing plus free trade, which is I think that's what Trump's going for. He wants both. He wants free trade, but he also wants a booming American economy. And he knows that you're going to have to bring manufacturing jobs. You're going to have to bring, you know, you're going to have to make Main Street sing in order for this to be okay. So I think if he gets through his first year, because it's going to take his first year to shake off all these dumb leftist lawsuits that are getting knocked off little by little. I think that in the midterms, I think you're going to see a super majority in the House and the Senate. I think that if they just keep on banging the same drum and they don't get any smarter than they are, they're just going to give up about half a dozen seats in both the House and Senate, which will give us a super majority, which will make it impossible for them to pass anything or get anything done.
But again, we got to get these. I mean, I think their actions to take control of some of these woke judges and stuff is a good move.
And I believe that if they can get that this bill that they want to pass where they, And they've got the majority now to pass it, but they just got to pass it to say, hey, you cannot interfere in these things legally anymore. And these woke judges technically can't. What they're doing is they're using the only tool that they have, which is the injunction.
Yeah.
And the injunction isn't permanent. That's like the yellow light on the red, green, yellow, right? It just slows things down and mucks things up and makes things harder. I am disappointed in our Supreme Court because they seem to really want to waffle on a lot of things
that are
very clear, which tells me that maybe our Supreme Court isn't, you know, I could name a few members of the Supreme Court that I've been very disappointed in and very overwhelmingly sad about their behavior. And it makes me question their conservatism.
Their integrity.
But unfortunately there's this. We're in the middle of the muck, man. If you're gonna clean out the swamp, this is what it's like to clean out the swamp, right? Every beast is gonna fight back. You know what you're seeing now is the Democrat Party's piggy bank has been shattered and then thrown away, and all that money that they were, you know, shuffling off to the side for their dumb programs is getting taken away. And they're acting and screaming and carrying on like impetulant children. Like this is what you're seeing right now is a reversal of behavior. That sounds like Bernie Sanders sounds like an angry teenager. He doesn't sound like a grown man with grown man problems. When he complains, he sounds like an angry teenager that's writing a manifesto. He sounds like someone who's winding up to do something stupid. They all do. AOC, all of them, when they talk, they don't talk like adults who are trying to talk to other adults. They talk like angry, impetulant teenagers. And it's so sad to me
who's the worst at this right now?
I think I know what you're going to say, but say it.
Michelle Obama.
Oh, yeah. She's worse than anybody.
This stupid podcast of hers. And I've seen, now I won't watch, I haven't watched it, but I've seen some clips.
I've listened to a little bit of it. She does a lot of insulting her husband. She does a lot of,
it's awful, dude,
subversive language, not saying anything directly, but
yeah,
you know, saying it.
It's awful, dude.
It's one of the worst things I've ever listened to. Cause it's like listening to a leftist teenager cry about all their problems. There's no, she doesn't offer any solutions. She doesn't offer any, you know, any remedy. She just, you know, goes on there. And what's weird is her brother is the co-host. That's even weirder. Like nobody knows who your brother is, period. No. Nobody cares.
But no, we don't. But it's just the little bits here and there I've gleaned was like, ew, it was just ick.
When she says things, I think she's one of those that's so deep in the delusion that she'll never get out.
Well, I think she's at the top of that delusion, dude.
Yeah, but I think she's so deep in the delusion that the reality will never manifest to her.
Yeah. Like, I mean,
and I think the danger of it right now is a lot of the people involved in the Democratic Party are trapped in that same delusion.
Well, I mean, but you got to understand, I think a great deal of them know what they've bought into. I don't think that's a question.
Actually, to be truthful with you, I'll say this.
They've taken the paycheck and they've done it.
The normal people, I don't think they have any idea.
Well, I think like
a I think your everyday average citizen? Joe citizen has no idea what they've bought into.
No, I don't think I think you're right about that.
I think that, but I think politically, if you're involved politically in any way,
yes,
you are bought and paid for.
You are bought and paid, and I think they know they're bought and paid for. They yeah. play for a team. They've yeah. they've been paid to do XYZ.
Yeah.
They know their marching orders, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, so do the rhinos who are up there who are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
They're the same. It's the same
people. I mean, the Republican Party right now, unfortunately, outside of a select few, are spineless. They're just spineless.
I get that. Look, because here's the deal. Like, they keep trying to pass things or at least put bills on the table that make sense where, like, hey, a bill can't be longer than this. Yeah. You have to completely be able to read the bill before we vote on it kind yeah. of things. And those all got rejected. Right. And why?
Because they can't hide things in them.
Yeah. So you look at this stuff and you're like, well, what purpose are you even filling up there in a seat if you're not going to stand up for this crap?
Yeah.
Like, you know,
there's no purpose you're fulfilling. Then I would dare say that 90% of politicians are there for the paycheck, not for the people.
Oh, yeah.
And the 10% that are there for the people. You know, how can 10% fight 90? You're never going to win. I mean, the Josh Hawleys and those types of people that are out there that are legitimately have an interest in seeing justice done and things being made whole don't get a lot of ears because the other 90% is making so much noise you can't hear them.
Yeah, it's crazy, dude.
So
it's crazy. But
well, I think we need to talk about something else. I'm going to bring up Reginald. Let's talk about the death of the Pope, man. He was a very controversial dude in the Catholic religion because he believed in, you know, and I went back and studied a little bit and read some of the things that he had said. And, you know, he was against keeping LGBTQ and homosexual and all that out of the church because in his mind, he's like, there are brothers and sisters and they need us.
But not leaders
as open for cannon fodder as that could be. I don't think he meant necessarily anything bad by it. I feel like he was probably the most liberal pope that they had in the sense of allowing as much as he allowed. But what did you think, man? Did you think, you know, what are your thoughts on the newer, what's coming in the future? I've been reading and apparently this is the first time in papal history that it's possible that there could be an African Pope. There's like four or five African Catholics that are up for the running of it. And,
well, let me speak to this real quick.
Okay.
I thought the Pope was completely heretical in so many ways.
Well, I think the existence of the Pope is questionable.
True. But I'm saying his dictation, his leadership and what he spoke to people about and what he said were a lot of things were heretical.
Yeah.
What he allowed in the Catholic Church, heretical in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I didn't shed a tear. I didn't feel bad or anything when he died. I mean, hopefully he comes.
I didn't shed a tear. I wasn't like, oh, I didn't, but I mean, it's always sad when someone dies, right? You don't ever want someone to.
No, but I'm just saying like, I can be indifferent about somebody's passing on, dude.
Yeah. And I'm pretty indifferent about it as well.
That's all I'm saying. Like it was
one of the things that I'm wondering is if you look back at the original Catholic Church, it was super conservative in its beliefs as far as how things went. And the Catholic Church has taken this big left turn where it said, okay, we're going to accept all these things, which here's my issue is when you begin to allow a society to dictate your behavior inside your church, you've lost your church. And I'm not picking on Catholics. In the Christian church right now, there is a massive problem with societal norms creeping into the church.
Brian, they saw the Catholic Church attendance and stuff dwindling. So what they did was try to get and be more of the world to draw more people in, and that's not worked. That's backfired. Yeah. So, and that's what happens every single time. It's the churches that actually, well, I can't say that to you because you still have like Joel Osteen out there.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. The Christian church has got it too. We got the Elevations and the Osteens.
All I'm saying is, though, is the Catholic Church needs to revert back to being a biblically sound church. Besides some of this, I mean, as biblically sound as Catholic can be, because it's just they're not doing themselves or anything. However, one of the reasons why the Catholic Church has not been a thing that I am even close to being in support of or not is just because of the what they have done in the past and continue to lead the church to do and stuff. Like I applaud the way they started it with, hey, we're going to come into a place, we're going to put a school, we're going to put a hospital, we're going to put education, you know, whatever. They need these.
They were going to feed you mentally, spiritually, physically.
Yeah, I mean, here you go. But then they kind of look to the church as the ultimate thing, and then therefore they've gone way overboard in many instances. I mean, horribly, to force the indoctrination and do really terrible things in the name of the Catholic Church. Priests have done horrible things in the name of Catholic Church. Whatever. And it's not I'm not talking about the Inquisition either, because I think the Inquisition was necessary, but that we'll talk about that another time. But the point is, I'm not surprised when the Catholic Church makes moves to try to grow itself, even if that means compromising on the Catholic views of things and everything else. If they want to make any further progress and they want to be more legitimate and grow a little bit, yeah, you got to get rid of this stupid, you know, anti-biblical nonsense you've been promoting, especially with your leadership. Especially with your leadership, and you got to crack down on the nonsense that goes on in some of this stuff, dude. I mean, that's
well,
it.
Well, I think
I don't care where the Pope comes from.
And here's the thing, for me, it's the Christian Church has its own popes, the Joyce Meyers and the Joel Osteens and the Stephen Furticks. People that believe that they are so pious that when they say something, it means it's true. So for me, it's not necessarily just the Catholic Church. I think I think society is bleeding into the church in a general sense. And what I mean by that is, Christian churches, Catholic churches, because there for a while, religion became kind of passé. And in an attempt to reignite the religious movement, we allowed ourselves to do some things within our churches that are just not okay biblically. You know, I think that when the purpose of the church is to generate, for lack of a better term, anti-societal people, which is people who don't believe in society's mores. They believe in the mores of the Bible, right? And right now what we're doing is, you know, I go back to some of the things I've heard. I mean, I've heard Stephen Furtick step up to the podium and say that Jesus was not the Son of God.
Yep.
Right?
Correct.
You know, what in the name of Pete are you thinking? You know, I heard Joel Osteen's wife come out and say that Christ wasn't holy until he was born. Christ is the Trinity. He's been holy from the moment the holy was there. I've heard just some, and then, you know, I've heard some very upsetting things come from within the church, Catholic, Christian, Baptist, Episcopalian. I mean, if you really want to take a really good look at what's going on that's wrong in the church, look at the Methodist Church and what's happened to the Methodist Church. The Methodist Church is devastated because of this very thing, right? The allowing of societal norms to creep into the church. My question is, do you think that the church can recover from allowing this to happen? Do you think that the poisons it's like the snake bite. Do you get to the hospital in time or?
Yeah. The thing is, I think Christianity as a whole, if you look at not just America, but if you look at Christianity as global, it's continuing to escalate.
Yeah.
Christianity.
But my question is it escalating because of God or is it escalating because the church has granted such a high level of societal norms?
No.
That people think that they can do that.
You got to look at where the church is growing rapidly. And where the church is growing rapidly is in places where there's higher, like a lot of persecution and all this kind of stuff.
Okay.
And there, obviously they're not following what the current cultural norm is for that place if they're being hunted down, and especially in like Africa and Nigeria and all that crap right now. Massive amounts of Christians being just slaughtered.
Well,
but all I'm saying, Korea and like China and all these places have large underground faith building stuff, and it's the church is being used in that case because it's the body of Christ, but it's not being led by this you know culturally influenced thing. They're welcoming the Bibles. They look for the Bible. They get jailed for having a Bible. You know what I mean? Yeah. So what I'm saying is like, you know, we in the America are we're seeing a lot more people now returning back to traditional views.
Yes.
And that goes along with the traditional ways of looking at Christianity and the church and everything else. That's where we're at with Christians today.
Yeah.
And the only places you're going to see growth in Christianity in America are those churches and organizations who take that very seriously and follow that way. God is going to do it through churches.
Yes, I know. Arguably, my thought on this is this, and maybe this is just a jaded view for me. I don't know. But when you go on something like Facebook or Instagram, you don't see the small churches. All you see are the elevations and and you see these well-crafted snippets of 30 seconds of a sermon and these well-groomed, well-dressed. I can't even remember the name of this guy, but it just threw me the first time I saw him because he's wearing an Armani suit. He's got a gold chain on that probably costs 50 grand. He's wearing a Rolex watch and he's on stage preaching about how, God is only going to bless you if you bless the church. And that's what we're seeing in the biggest medium out there right now. We're not seeing, we're not seeing mainstream streams of MacArthur and Vadi and all those people. We're seeing, the worst of the worst, like the worst examples of what religion is. If you look monetarily, and I didn't get all the numbers down, but monetarily, the church has grown in the United States quite a bit monetarily.
True.
But I think it's on the back of these churches that are offering, conditional salvation, right?
I'm trying to find this one church that I follow, but keep going.
But you know what I'm saying? Like this conditional salvation, because I mean, but let's be honest, and you and I are honest and we can speak with each other. When I became a Christian, the person who administered to me was honest with me about what being a Christian meant. And it was a daunting thought because I was going to become one of the chosen, but also one of the few, right? I don't think that's what the mainstream churches are selling right now. I think the mainstream churches are selling you can be whatever you are and be a Christian, and which is why I say that the church in the U.S. is growing, but I believe it's growing in the wrong direction. I can come to church and praise and say I love you, Jesus, and then go back home.
But
and
I don't think that.
Punch
I mean,
my
that,
wife and.
But see, that's the thing. That's the job of us as of men in the body of Christ is to either create or support those organizations that don't do that. Right.
Yep.
We're to lift up and build up the edification of the body of body of Christ through how the Bible teaches us to be that. And that includes being more longer than like a Sunday after, a Sunday morning service. Right.
Yes, I agree.
I don't think a lot of churches are preaching that, though. I mean, even some of the churches I've been to over the last few years to find a new church home, which I still haven't found, that I keep looking. But, you know, they're not preaching that. They're not preaching, you know, they're not, but they're what goes beyond that isn't what they're preaching and what they believe in. It's just like, there's not really a lot of action taken to make those things really happen.
Now, do you think part of that is because, and I think you and I experienced this at a church we were at together, it's easy to ask somebody in your congregation to go out and affect the community, but it's not as easy to teach them how. And I think a lot of times churches will go, well, you need to go out into community and you need to do these things. And they sound really good, but the church doesn't supply any training or direction as to how to get there. Right. I think, you know, you and I together, you know, we were at, and we heard an awful lot about touching and reaching out and touching people, but we were in a church that didn't do a whole lot of outreach and didn't do a whole lot of reach out and touch people. And then when you ask for direction, they're like, well, you just go out and no, it's not that simple. If you want me to do something, it's like I tell people that get a job, everybody can get a job, but the only people that do it well are the people that have been trained well. Well, I think we need to train Christians on how to handle being out in the world and talking about their faith. And, you know, some Christians, like myself, I don't really care to talk about anything I believe. I don't have a fear of discussing what my faith and my beliefs are.
Yeah, a lot of people do, though.
But a very large majority of the church will leave the church and they clam up.
Yeah.
I believe that that's part of the problem is the evangelical part of the church is silent. And it needs to be loud.
What I'm saying is that there are evangelical, and I don't mean that by the denomination or indication of that sect or whatever, but there are a large number of people who are gifted with evangelism that do have large significant followings that do try to teach this. There's books upon books written about it. I think that in our culture, though, it's hard to break away from the cultural norm of what that means. We are too like anti, I shouldn't say too, but we've got so anti like door-to-door salesmen and, you know, scam things and this and that. Like we're just inundated with all the negative touch points that we have throughout the day that just going around the neighborhood isn't the right way to evangelize anymore. Right.
Well,
it has to come from other means just because of the way the world works.
Well, another thing that, you know, I think we're missing is the community aspect in the sense of, well, the Barkers are throwing a barbecue this weekend and they don't have to invite anyone. Everybody knows who the Barkers are and everybody knows they're welcome and people get together and live in community. I think we don't do that anymore.
Well, that's definitely true because we don't. We're very, and I mean, this is on purpose. We've been conditioned to be isolationists and we're continually pushed to be more like that because it divides and it kind of shrinks stuff.
It carves a valley in between people.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we're meant to do. We're not meant to go. We're meant to be that way, but we've been siloed and pushed that way by whatever you want to say, but I mean, yeah, it's on purpose.
Well, I think, and that's kind of why I've gone to the non-denominational path, because I think that's part of it too. I don't care if you're a Baptist or a Christian church. If we're all biblically sound, why does there have to be the Baptist and the Catholic and the Christian? Why can't we all just be brothers in Christ, right?
We can. There's some doctrinal issues that we should be able to talk about between the different things.
Well, and on top of that, there are some biblical transgressional actions that are taken within the church that we should be able to call each other out on.
Sure. But again, there are lots of good churches, man. I mean, there are. I just, it's not that any church that I've been to over the last whatever has not been like a biblical truth, like gospel church or whatever.
Yeah. The church I go to now is a great church.
Yeah, but the only problem is I don't want to go to the worship. You know what I mean?
But
that's not how you go to church.
I don't really go to I want to go to the classes, so I go to the classes. It has nothing to do with not wanting to go to the sermon or the worship. Mentally, I am in a different place in my walk now than I was 5 years ago.
Well, I agree, but like,
so for me, I'm looking for that poignant discussion, education, pour in part of what church provides, right? And here's the thing too, is I think too many people take offense. And what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of times I've gotten, well, you don't go to service? No. What, do you not like service? I have no opinion on service at all. Like I know who I am and I know what I need right now. And I know what I'm looking for that's going to help build me biblically,
yeah,
and help with my faith. And right now I need that input. I need that time of being challenged by the teacher, being in the discussion, hearing other ideas. That's the stage I'm in right now. Now, there might be 5 years from now, I might be in the worship stage, right? And I might need the sermon and the worship and all those things. But that's not where I am in my walk right now.
Well, we all need to worship. We'll say that.
But I do worship. I mean,
I know. But all I'm saying is like the church for me, if you're not gathering as one body, that's not, if I don't feel the desire to be in that congregation with like the body of the church, there's something wrong. Now that could be something wrong with me, but it still means there's something wrong.
Okay.
Like we should want to gather with the body of the church as one to worship together and gather together, right?
Well, let me ask you a question. Knowing the two, is there any difference?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm within the body being in my class.
Yeah, but you're only with like a dozen people in the class. You're not with the body, the whole body of the church, dude.
You know, what I tell people is where one or more dwell, there I am, right? So if I've got 12 or 15 people in a room and we're discussing the Bible and worship, and to me, that's a form of worship, to be sitting there and extolling the virtues of God's word and discussing. So for me, I am worshiping in that environment.
I know, but what I'm saying is that's only a part of it though. Like if your congregation isn't just 12 people, let's say if it's a couple hundred people, there's a time and place for everyone to get together as those 200 body of people to sit down together and worship and have a time together. That's what your worship service nowadays should be. I don't agree with the like standard format that they do. Like, I think that's just been kind of cookie cutter and how they've done things. And
a lot of what's going on in the churches.
But there should be a point in time where, whether it's whatever day you're going to call it, Sunday is what we call it here, the Sunday morning where the body of the church gets together in one place to commune with God.
Question. Do you think that has more to do with the church not providing what we need? Or do you think that has more to do with us getting comfortable almost isolating?
Well, I know for me, it's almost the latter. I mean, cause I'm like, I don't, it's not that I don't appreciate a good sermon or not that I don't appreciate worship or whatever, but, I'm not going to learn anything new. I need to be reminded all the time.
I would disagree with that statement, because if you're not going to learn anything new, that means the Bible's not a living word.
No, it's not true.
Because because there are things I learn. I know my Bible back and forth.
But I said from a sermon.
And there are things, well, you don't know that. You don't know you never know how God's going to deliver his word.
Well, what I'm saying is,
that's a very, I'm sorry, I'm going to say this, that's a very egotistical thing to say.
Probably.
And that is a very, very, very short-sighted view of things.
But you're kind of cutting that a little short than what I'm meaning too.
Well, lay it out for me, man. I want to know.
What I mean by new is I know who Jesus is.
Well,
I know
the gospel. We all know that, but I'm talking about the application of words and the delivery of his.
But that shouldn't be in a sermon. Okay. The sermon is a generalized thing for all the people to hear and get, have reminded of the gospel. And you can look at like how people go through the sermons and stuff like that. There's a, the sermon is not the time for deep Bible study, right?
I don't know. That's not what the sermon. I've heard some pretty deep sermons.
You can't have deep sermon, but I'm saying generally the sermon is not.
Now, I will say that a lot of sermons are delivered in a very, I don't know what I'm trying to say, like a very, it's like boiled chicken. It's edible, but you don't really, it doesn't really taste all that good, right? Like it's just something that's kind of being, it's kind of like taking a lukewarm shower, you know, it's.
So what all I'm saying is like a sermon typically is a message to remind everyone of why they're there, who Jesus is, who the gospel is, okay. That kind of stuff. That's not, it's not a place to like dig into the linguistics or the hermeneutics or the eschatological things of Christology.
But I'm going to be honest with you, and I'm just going to say it. 99% of biblical classes I've gone to ain't digging into hermeneutics.
I know.
Like it's
but that, that's my point.
That's more, I feel like that's more for us, right?
It
that's,
is.
That's the starving part of us,
that
right?
Is.
You and I love that stuff. I love all of that. But the average Christian, if you put the word hermeneutics, they're going to say bless you.
But and that's exactly what I mean. That's the point of the sermon though. Because the sermon's got to point to that person. It's gotta apply to the person who walks off the street, never heard Jesus before. It's gotta remind those who have been in it for a long time of what it's for. But it's not gonna be it shouldn't be this like, you know, study into the historical aspects of who like Spurgeon is and like who why Tyndale did what he's supposed to do and like let's get into a 8-week study on Tyndale and all this stuff. That's not what the sermon is supposed to be. Which what I mean is I shouldn't be learning anything new in a sermon. I might hear something that's a perspective
that
or a
makes
new
more
thing,
sense,
but I shouldn't be learning like that translation that he just used there, he dove into the ancient Hebrew there, and that correlates with the Greek there and the Armenian there, and does this, and that was geologically.
Yeah, but honestly, Reggie, how many people actually do that?
Other than
you and I, and maybe a few people,
I have heard sermons before where they did try to do that, and everybody, except for myself, was like.
They all were like,
yeah, that's so the sermon is part of what you're orating to a group of people that are across a wide spectrum of where their walk in faith is.
Okay.
So you don't want it to be,
you're even orating to people that don't have a walk in faith.
Yeah. So the purpose of that sermon is just for you to get together, to be reminded of what the gospel is, to be led to the gospel necessary or something like that. But you're not going to dig into something if you have any biblical study, anything at all. Like I shouldn't bring in Liberty University materials and try to do a sermon on, you know, my class I took on Paul's ministry or something. Right. I mean, that's what I mean.
That makes sense. That makes total sense.
The you should have a place in the church that's outside of your weekly gathering that does give you the opportunity to dig into some of those specific things and could very well lead very deep places where you can learn a lot of stuff and gain new knowledge. But the actual weekly, we're going to gather as one body and we're going to commune and worship the Lord. That should be the generalized thing that we all go to. And we all want to go there. We all want to be in commune.
Okay. So I have a question and I've always wanted to ask you this question.
Yes.
I know your musical background. You're a fantastic drummer, to say to say it in a short way. It's like watching a kid walk into Willy Wonka's factory when Reggie's behind the drums. It's all going to happen. One of your biggest issues is with worship, and it's one of mine too. Simply because I've never found or been in a church where I've felt this move to worship outside of a couple of churches, which what is the ideal look of worship for you? What would it, what, if you could have a worship that was going to be ideal, what would that look like?
I don't think there's an ideal look though.
I'm not talking about for everyone else. I'm talking about if it, all right, let's just say Jesus walked in here right now and said, Reggie, I found a church, and whatever your ideal worship service would be, it's going to be at that church. What would be waiting for you at that church?
Okay. So you're
like, I'll be honest. When we went to the men's abortion rally, that even wasn't even my ideal worship. It felt very chanty and kind of,
I don't know, but I like that. That was cool.
I like the songs, but the whole thing seemed like, it seemed like I was doing some kind of Gregorian chant. Like,
yeah.
I was like, you know,
but that's only because we're not really being exposed to that too much.
Yeah.
And I would say that part of we're neglecting the old hymns for one in our churches. Right. So
yeah, there needs to be a blend. I like to get down with some old rugged
there
cross.
There needs to be some blend of that stuff. We're pushing that out in favor of all these modern things. You know, what you're asking me is the question I've been asking myself now for like 5 years. I mean, because it's not really, I can look back at all kinds of services that I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
And I mean, they go from all over the place, man. I mean, even from tent revivals to like, I've enjoyed a lot of tent revival things. I've enjoyed a lot of big mega church things.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed really small church gatherings and stuff that were really cool. And I think what it boils down to for me, it's not really that there's, for one, I don't particularly want to have a cookie cutter like service that's the same each and every time, where I know that we're going to do two songs, we're going to do communion, we're going to do sermon, and then we're going to do another song, done. And that's what you do every week. I don't particularly care for that.
If, I'll be honest with you, the best worships I've ever been a part of, the ones that I have worshiped and sang my loudest, are very small churches who have very little equipment, but you've got a guitar and a mandolin and just a gospel, soulful singing. And you just, to me, that's so nurturing to hear all of that effort being funneled into that very small area. And I feel like it's very sincere and very, very heartfelt.
Well, I think you just nailed it where it is. It's like if I'm participating in a gathering where it's like the general sense is of this heart for God and like really look really like gospel centered, changes everything with that gathering, right? Because you can tell. There's a big difference between like if you go somewhere and you're like, if I'm playing or not playing, it's even more so. Like if when I was playing sometimes in some things, like you could tell when like everybody that you're playing with, music wise at least, is there's no other thought other than we are glorifying Christ right now.
Yeah.
Right. That's when I have moments of worship, of the outpouring of what I'm doing that is so strong that I've got tears coming down my eyes trying to fit it playing, right? That doesn't happen very often. But that's like the intensity that you get when you're participating in something with you're so aligned with this central purpose of His glory that you just – It's there's a whole other level of amazing work, like just that you're doing, right? So when I think about my like ultimate like church going experience is really just where, the group of people that are gathered there is, you know, for the majority of them, there's a purpose. They're there for a reason. They know that they're there to commune and worship together for this one purpose. So that anybody else that came in that room, it'd be unmistakable, right? And I've seen churches like that, and I've been to churches like that.
Well, that leads to my next question. You know, I've been in churches where 1 week the worship is amazing.
Oh, well, yeah.
I mean, and then the next following week, it's like, what happened?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that there are churches where worship is that amazing for every worship?
No. I think you have, you're going to have, because you, I mean, even in the most, even in the mega church that I was playing in, you have weekends where you'd have people that were on point. Yeah. And really cared about it and really looked at it. And it was great. It was really cool, right? Full production, all this stuff. But, you know, really the main thing is that all the people were
on the same page.
Oh, yeah, on the same page. And it was just cool. Like I could, when I was, especially in the megachurch thing, you know, I'd be sitting in that little drum booth on a Sunday morning. I'd have to get there. This is what people don't know. Especially with a mega church, like you're volunteering your time.
Yeah.
Right. So you have like multiple services on Saturday and Sunday that you're playing in. Well, you got to get there early for this and that. And then you show up and then you get there wicked early on Sunday morning. I mean, like it's a whole weekend thing you're committing to. And there was a lot of times and probably 99% of the time, man, I was super excited. It didn't matter if I had to get up at 5 a.m. to travel to some campus that was way out there. I didn't care. I was like, I was rip-raring to go. And you know how I am in mornings, man. I hate the freaking morning. Yeah. But I'd wake up at 5 a.m. on Sunday to go drive down to wherever, whatever campus. Super pumped, man. Just super pumped to be just going there. That's what you want, right? So if everybody feels that way in the worship team, it doesn't matter really what – it matters less what their talent level and what they're because they're there for the right reasons. And usually God has a way of working that stuff out. Right.
Yeah.
So that's what I would say, no matter. And even when I was at the Encounter Church that we were at, man, I had some great worship experiences there, like playing on that little stupid electronic drum set and being in there and all this stuff and just being like, feeling like, wow, this is, you know, I was in it and it was there. Right.
Yeah.
And it's palpable. You can almost like, you know, it's like you could freaking taste the atmosphere, you know? Yeah. So, and I think that's it, dude. It's all about being the right purpose. So you would say that
in order for the congregation to catch and engage on that level, that the worship team needs to be on that level.
You're leading worship
and pushing that out there.
Yeah. If you're not leading worship in that manner, that why are you expecting the congregation to do anything other than that? Now they can by themselves get into a place of that. Some people have, that is an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
I do not.
I don't either.
But if the worship team is on point and they're leading worship in that mindset and that team is doing that, sometimes the congregation has no choice but to just get swallowed into it, right?
Yeah.
And that's when it's good. And then you follow that up with whatever it could be. And if it's meaningful and if it's gospel centered, it's so much heart, mind connected to the Lord, that leads you to a whole other level of connecting to like that. Cause like for one thing, communion, right? Yeah, I find communion to be so one of those things that should be so revered and so could have such a impact. But then some churches just like,
here's your tiny little cracker. Here's a little cup of juice.
Here we are Sunday morning. We want to thank God for being here. Here's this cracker that represents the body of Christ. Here's the wine. And here, thank you. Like what? What? You just put.
Folks, you need to know something. I've wanted this conversation with Reggie for so long, and we're having it in public, and I love it. Because I understand more now. I used to, honestly, man, you would be like, oh, man, I hate worship. And I'd be like, does he hate worship or does he just not want to come to church? Right? That would be the question in my mind.
But you got
to
understand, man, like when you're playing, and I've had these just remarkable experiences playing. Once you're there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You're always trying to get back to there, right? It's not. It's almost like a high, man. I mean, it is, but like it's different because you can still attain it and it doesn't cause detrimental effects to your body.
Very true.
And then so when I go to a place and I'm like sitting there and I'm like trying to, and I'm thinking about the song and I'm sitting there and I'm critical about everything. That's the reason why I'm at where I reached a level at where I was with as a musician. And it just takes the winds out of my sail, man. It just does.
That's understandable.
And it becomes even, it goes farther than that. And I recognize it's a me problem, right?
Necessarily think it's a you problem. I think part of it is you can go to the same church on the same day. If you could be in 8 different churches at the same time, it's become so cookie cutter that I almost would guarantee that at one point or another, they would all sing one of the same songs, like Bethel or something from Bethel or something to, you know, and I've been in church and I've been like, you know, you guys have sang this song every Sunday for 6 months. Are you just not capable of learning a different song? Or do you just really think it's that good? Or, you know, I think a lot of it is that, Christian worship is it needs a leader in it that says, you know, we need to create a worship that's going to draw people in. And, I go back to the late 1980s when bands like DC Talk and the Newsboys and a lot of those guys, Stephen Curtis Chapman, there was a lot of really good original Christian music that was coming out mainstream, right? DC Talk was appearing on late night television shows and performing and getting to talk about their faith and things like that. And I feel like there was this it just died and nobody attempted to make anything better. And I feel like right now you got a lot of Christian rap artists, which some of them are pretty good, right? I like some of them. Lecrae, some of those guys are really good. But a lot of them are just out there trying to make something because they couldn't make it in the mainstream music industry. And I feel like if we put our minds to it, that we could write worship songs about God that were enticing and inviting and rhythmic and would get us into those movements and things like that. And I think we've just kind of abandoned ship and said, well, you know, Bethel comes up with a new song every 3 months. We'll just adopt that song. It's become this experience of, I know what to expect.
Yeah.
Well, it's not, I'm coming into the worship and the worship team is really going to try to do something that's going to blow me away and really kind of put me in that mindset of worshiping. It's here's the same songs we've sang for the last year in a different order.
But this is part of my problem. This is also part of my problem. Yeah. A big part of my problem. I always thought, man, God gave me these gifts and talents, and I need to use these. And not only do I need to use them, but I need to put my heart, mind, soul, strength, everything into this for His purpose. And that includes songs and songwriting and everything else, right? And if I'm with the worship group, I had many conversations with worship leaders that were big time about this, because it's like, look, why we got these, we have plenty of talent and like things to use. We need to be using that at the utmost of our heart, mind, body, soul. These are all in this. We don't need to be singing the same Bethel songs over and over and over again. No, we can write our own. We got talent to do that. We got all the stuff to do that. Put some time and effort and create towards that purpose. We can. There's plenty of people that can do that. Like, you don't need to sit there and do that. That's a lazy way out. Now, I don't mean you shouldn't ever sing somebody else's song. That's not what I'm saying. But, like, that should not be what you just say, hey, you know what? This is what's popular on the radio now. Let's play it on worship. For a lot of reasons, again, I detest Bethel, Elevation, and Hillsong and their ideologies that are heretical. And whenever I hear these stupid, because that's all the damn radio will play,
Yeah.
And it annoys the crap out of me that, because people don't understand that their main evangelistic tool is the music. That's what pulls all these people to fund their churches. So in other words, whenever you promote these songs, do these songs, you're leading people back to those organizations. You buy their albums, you're helping those organizations.
On top of it too, to me, that kind of is the ultimate pinnacle of lazy in the sense, because if these heretical organizations can write such good music that everybody wants to, and they're heretical and they believe in things that are absolutely unbiblical, why can't we?
I know. And look, I'm not saying all these songs themselves are that way. I'm not saying that. Although there's a significant amount of them that point back to what they are doing,
if the devil offered me a Bible, I don't know that I would take it.
Yeah. Anyway,
you know what I'm saying? Like just because you might write something that sounds really good and has some Bible knowledge in it, if you at your core are a heretical individual, I'm going to be far less likely to take that from you on any serious level.
So the other part, if there's a sermon component to the worship service, a good sermon's cool. It's not like, and again, this is what I'm saying. I don't look at that as a way to learn something new, but like if somebody's really orating well, they're talking through one of the parables or they're talking through something and using that to in illustrations and all this stuff. That's beautiful, man. It's really cool.
It's incredible.
And I can be captivated by that as a reminder of what I'm supposed to be doing in daily life. I mean, that's awesome. I've heard some fantastic.
Oh, dude, awesome, I've had some sermons. Guys throw some sermons down, and I've been like, dude.
Yeah, I mean, like
home run.
Like I mean, like even online. Like if I go to watch an online church service, right? Because I do that a lot. Because I want to know what all the other churches are doing and stuff, and it'll just be this pastor preacher that's just on fire, man. And it's just like, this is so cool, right? And I know that takes a special type of person. They're not that common. I get that. Like if you go to your own local church, probably just somebody who just they needed a pastor and then you just happen to be able to do the job. Man, I get it. I'm not begrudging that, but I know a lot of preachers, man, they really try hard. They do. I do. But anyway, so that's where I'm at. It's just like, you know, there's a reverence and there's a place to gather all week, but there's a purpose behind it. And for me, if everybody is like, who's a member there, and not everybody, but like you got the vast majority of people in this worship team specifically who are leading worship, if they're all really got that single-minded goal of glorifying God.
Yeah.
Then it's palpable. And like whoever comes into that church body, whoever does, is going to get, whoa, what is this? It creates an atmosphere for that to happen. That's all I'm saying, right?
What do you think stops a lot of worship leaders from being passionate?
Man, I don't know. I
mean, dude, I'm digging deep in this one.
Passionate is different, I guess.
I'll hear a lot of guys up there and they're really singing and they're playing. But it's almost like they're singing to themselves.
Because you have, you have to understand that your walk at that point is more critical than anything. So if you've been putting a lot of effort into your walk with Christ and your prayer life is, you know, everything flows into that. You're able to connect with God when you are trying to connect with God on a daily basis. If you're not, that's going to be difficult. Yep. Right. So, and especially for a musician who's been a professional for a long time, you already know what it's like to play on stage. You already know what it's like to play in front of a lot of people. You already know, you've been there many times. So for you, you're used to being the center of attention and all that stuff. And it's easy to put that face on. It can be difficult to realize that and go, wait a minute, what should I really be doing right now? Where's my heart? Have I really prepared for this event in order to like put my heart and mind and soul in the right place? So it's there's a lot of work and stuff that goes into that. So that's why I would say if you find a worship leader that may be singing really well, but It's just because maybe they're not in the right spot. Mm-hmm. They haven't put the work in beforehand to put themselves in the right spot.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have been educated. I feel like I should get an honorary degree.
But, you know, it's all personal stuff, man. I mean, like, you know, it's not an easy thing all the time to prepare, to put the work in to where you can be that vessel on the weekend. Because it's an all week thing.
Yeah.
All year thing. Like if you're not putting the work in, it's really difficult to be that way on a Sunday, you know, and it's, you got to do it.
Well, man, I think we've come to the end of our time.
Indeed, we have.
Mind blown. I now know more than I ever knew, and I understand more than I ever knew.
So, look out for the Egyptian American Antichrist. Make sure
Antichrist. What is he? A Mahudi? Moody?
Moody.
He seemed a little moody.
Yeah. He might be serving you coffee at the Starbucks.
So. Yeah. You know, with his. I gotta say, Reggie's impersonation was great. It was like having a guest on the show.
It was, dude.
Yeah.
This is Army Talks.
I'm Brian.
I'm Reggie.
See ya.
Bye-bye.